Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Somehow, God is in me, and there's a sense in which I am like God and man all at once.
Many religions claim that we will all eventually be gods. The Bible says something so much better. It says, no, God will continue to be God. Man will continue to be man, but God will come upon man.
No way!
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Evangelical churches should love this. This is Wretched Radio because evangelicals tend to be a rather trendy and pragmatic lot. Would like to share with you a trend. It's not a good one, but it's a trend nevertheless, which I hope evangelical churches jump all over. This is a trend that is bad, that should be addressed by the church. Unlike typical trends, which evangelical Christianity tends to jump on, bad ideas, bad methodologies, what's the current latest zeitgeist? Hey, what's hip, what's happening? We'll be that. No, not talking about those bad trends. I'm talking about the bad trend of prodigal children. I'm talking about the trend of parents who are separated from their kids. Children who will not speak to their parents. This is an issue that I recognized a number of years ago in speaking to good Christian parents, not perfect Christian parents. There is no such thing. But they tried to raise up their child to love the Lord, and they goofed. Of course they did. I do, you do, we all goof. But overall, you would be able to say, in looking at them, they're good parents. They're good Christian parents, and yet their kids despise them. They've run away from them. They won't talk to them. And parents are heartbroken. And typically with that, of course, you've got kids that aren't believers. They walk away from parents. They walk away from their faith. And I think, at least in part, it is because our culture has been screaming at our kids and we have not been responding, even with a whisper. The world tells kids parents are stupid. All of the commercials make dad look like a dum-dum. Parents, they're just all over my case. And what are most of the sitcoms that involve kids about? How do we get away with it so that mom and dad don't find out? Because they don't understand. They don't know me. They don't know what it's like. And the world tells me I'm amazing. I can do anything that I want to if I just set my mind to it, believe in myself. I know everything, and I'm an autonomous self, which is exactly the message of the world. You're autonomous from everything. By the way, historical note, Western civilization has not always thought in those terms, although it has been a battle, because so much of our founding was indeed based on autonomy, that we are individuals with individual rights. Really cool. Love the concept. But the development of the Marlboro man, that you are your own person, you're your own self, what is the implication? You don't need institutions. You don't need family. You don't need church. You're you. You don't submit. You're the center of the universe. That's the message our kids keep hearing. And what does the church say in return? Cue the crickets. Absolutely nothing. And so it is. Kids in good Christian homes, they're told by the world something that their flesh craves, autonomy, not to have to submit and honor parents, but to live any way that I want to. After all, I can get an abortion without their permission. I can change my body parts without their permission. We, as a society, make parents virtually irrelevant. After all, it doesn't take parents to raise a child. It takes the government to raise a child. More bad French philosophy. And how have we responded to this? Have we encouraged the kids? Hey, your mom and dad are the bee's knees. You are blessed by having your mom and dad. And guess what? You have the privilege and joy of honoring them all of the days of your life. And if you find that onerous, perhaps this will be a selfish motivation, but believe me, you're going to enjoy this when you are older and your kids are big. They're going to honor you. And we're going to encourage them and remind them, just as we're encouraging and reminding you. And you can even remind us to honor our parents. We haven't done that, have we? The silent pain and secret shame in our churches. This came out January 18th. Paul Todges. I'm seeing this more and more and more. I saw it years ago in talking to parents at homeschool conventions. Homeschool parents aren't perfect. Believe me, I know. We were homeschool parents. And so if we are at all typical, then there's plenty of sin in the house. But you would see these kids at the homeschool convention that were well behaved, that were acting appropriately and not being obnoxious. But that's not all the kids. Yeah, they're older kids. They're gone and they've left. They don't talk to us. Whoa, what happened? Now, I grant you, let's just say some of those Christian parents who homeschooled their kids, they were oppressive. Let's just say they were heavy-handed. Let's just say there was a disconnect between morality and justification. Let's just say all of that happened. Is that an excuse for the kid to not honor their parents? No, it's not. And yet, how much preaching have we been doing to our kids? Hey, you want to be different than the other kids? Here it is. Honor your parents. The next time that you're invited to go to the party and everybody's like, yeah, you're going to come, and you go, I'm going to honor my parents. They wouldn't want me to go to this. Oh, dude, can you feel the peer pressure? And where's the church? Where's the church? Now, here's another aspect of this subject that perhaps we've neglected. The hearts of the parents of the prodigal children. Crushed, broken, devastated. You see them in church Sunday morning. How are they doing? Fine. Fine. Good. How are you? Fine. So have you heard from Sammy? No. But everything's good. Yeah. Everything's good. Maybe not everything is so good. And maybe the church could become a center and a place where parents with broken hearts because of prodigal children can feel safe to express that. Shouldn't church be the place we can do that? I mean, honestly, isn't that the label that we were all given when we were born again? It was an admission that we are not perfect parents, perfect spouses, perfect anything. Do we need any sort of icebreaker on the subject? Isn't an identification with Jesus Christ our icebreaker into being very clear, I am not perfect? How can we help these parents? Asked Paul Todges, really good biblical counselor and pastor, by the way. We need to break the silence in our churches and surround hurting parents with loving community, as well as minister gospel hope to hearts that are tempted to become overwhelmed by feelings of shame. Look around in your church, and you are going to find somebody who has not shared with anybody that they've got other children because they're gone. Where are they? We don't know. And it's shameful, and they're heartbroken, and they don't feel like they can talk about it. This is from Paul Todges, I think, really, really helpful stuff. A gentle prompt from a church counselor or pastor, a shepherd, an elder, may be necessary to move the hurting parent to confide in one or two trustworthy, spiritually mature believers. Direct them to biblical examples of vulnerability, reminding them that God's grace empowers them in weakness. This humble vulnerability will pave the way to the development of loving community and devotion to prayer. That's Colossians 4:2. That's what happens. We start bearing one another's burdens. We love for one another, and we pray like nobody's business because our hearts ache with those whose hearts are aching. Doesn't that sound like a nice place to be? Wouldn't that be nice? I'm not talking about a sin dump. Hey, morning, everybody. I'm not fine. I was looking with lust this morning in the parking lot. Thought everybody should know about that because I'm vulnerable. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a community where people don't go, oh, I had no idea that you had lustful thoughts. I mean, honestly, I thought you were a Christian. My children aren't like that. I love it. I really enjoy this, maybe in a sinful kind of way, when I see people go public with their parenting blogs to help other parents to become magnificent parents. And their firstborn is 3. Okay. You get back to us when they're 13. We'll talk then. Wouldn't it be nice to be in a community where we could actually be vulnerable with one another? Maybe from the pulpit, maybe in Sunday school. Not doing this just big expose on how awful my thought life is, how terrible my tongue wags, how angry I can get at my children. Not everything needs to be disclosed, but when it's a hurting heart and help is needed and comfort could really help to heal, shouldn't we be able to? Break the silence through vulnerability. It will create loving community. Further, often parents of prodigals suffer in silence because they feel ashamed. They typically feel like a failure and believe their child's rebellion must somehow be their fault. It's not. Yep, you were a bad parent. Congratulations, join the club. It's not your fault that they're not saved. They must carefully guard their hearts against the crippling power of morbid introspection, which overanalyzes their past actions. Instead, they need to redirect mental energies to set their minds on Christ. That's what we all need to be doing all the time. Why? Because if you are feeling guilty again from the same sins that you've been forgiven of, you need to look to Christ. On the other hand, if you've been thinking, you know, I've been doing pretty well, you need to look to Christ and discover, oh no, you've not been. God accepts the righteousness of Christ, not ours. We don't measure up either way. We need to be looking at Christ, and maybe, just maybe, if we would do more of that in our churches, in our lives, in our Sunday school classes, from the pulpit, maybe we would be shocked to discover how many hurting hearts we have in our midst and how the Comforter could help them if gospel balm is applied. Doesn't that sound like a nice place to be a member of which to be a member? This is Wretched Radio.
I say potato, you say potato. I say primer, he says primer. For the last 20 years, there's been a remarkable amount of talk about the gospel. But could it be that we've been talking more about the message than we have the wellspring of the message? The word gospel is used 25 times in the New Testament, but the word Jesus is used 691 times. Have we majored more on the message than we have on the center of the message? Maybe it's time we fill our hearts and our conversations more with Jesus. And Wretched has a unique opportunity for you to begin doing just that. Pastor Milton Vincent has written a powerful book that we know will grow your love for Christ. He calls it The Gospel Primer. I say primer. Either way, we wanted to make this book available to you because we want you to begin to experience the joy of the Lord in a more powerful way. Get your copy of The Gospel Primer by visiting wretched.org/gospel. That's wretched.org/gospel.
59 million people died last year from diseases like heart disease, cancer, diabetes. But the number one leading cause of death, its very own category of 42.6 million lives that ended, abortion. It is hands down the number one leading cause of death on the globe. And that statistic can overwhelm us and cause us to give up. But it should motivate us to get engaged, get involved, and fight for one life at a time. And we can do that through preborn.org/wretched. $28 buys an ultrasound. 80% of the time, mom chooses life. That is a good investment that saves lives. Would you please consider supporting as many ultrasounds as you can at preborn.org/wretched.
The father of lies has been a murderer from the start. His MO hasn't changed in 6,000 years. He desires to deceive people into doubt, and that can ultimately lead to disjointed desires, affections, behaviors, thinking, and worship. But Jesus is much better at what he does, telling the truth and giving life abundantly. And we want to help remind you of all the promises God has given us and just how much his word is sufficient for all of our struggles. Drive-by Biblical Counseling 3 is here. It's a 63-lecture series that biblically tackles issues like abuse, self-harm, eating disorders, addictions, and suicide. Order your copy right now and start learning how to apply the truth of Scripture to your life and to your struggles. God hasn't left us empty-handed. Drive-by Biblical Counseling 3 is available right now at wretched.org/counseling3. That's wretched.org/counseling3.
Revelation. General revelation is God's act of making himself known through his creation. A part of general revelation is the sensus divinatus, a sense of the divine. God has given every person an undeniable awareness of his existence. There are no true atheists, only rebels in denial of what every person knows to be true.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And as long as we're being nice, let's talk about your pastor's wife. This is Wretched Radio. Hey, 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 hey. Don't look at me like that. You talk about the pastor's wife too. So let's just put all of the cards on the table and maybe consider the life of the pastor's wife. Maybe, just maybe, this woman's heart is hurting more than most inside of a church. Why? She's been living in a fishbowl. Everybody watches. There is an unwritten expectation that the kids of pastors should be magnificent. They should be under control. The wife should be amazing. She has it all together. She serves all the time. Perhaps these are myths that need to be busted so that we can even minister to our pastor's wife. And I know your knee-jerk reaction. It's similar to mine. Wait a second. She's supposed to be ministering to me. No, she's not. She's the pastor's wife. She's supposed to be godly. That's a fact. That's what I think Paul is after in 1 Timothy 3, not female deacons, but the pastor's wives. They are to be godly. But that doesn't mean that they're to be sinless, and that doesn't mean that they're called into the ministry. Their husbands are called. He's the one with the office, and they're the ones who live with him. And it ain't easy, because the pastor, that's a good shepherd, not a showman, but that's a good shepherd, his heart is constantly torn. He wants to spend more time with his wife and children, but he loves the sheep. And when the sheep are hurting or when they are straying, he's distracted. He's consumed by it. And there's the missus. She is not getting a paycheck from the church. He is. She wasn't called. She's not the one who's supposed to really be doing anything for you beyond what we're supposed to be doing for one another, which means that she is to be using her gifts as she sees fit to help you as a part of the body, and vice versa. She's not an employee of the church. She's a fellow member of the church. And as we talk about pastors who have given up so much for you and for me, most likely, this is not always the case, but most likely you have a pastor who is transplanted. They moved from a different region of the country to come and serve you and your family, and she came with. She probably gave up being with family. She probably gave up familiarity. She probably gave up a lot of childhood memories. Why? Because she's married to her husband who took a call. And you get her blessing in your midst. But she is not called to be the one who fixes stuff around the church. It's just assumed, you know, the church kitchen is a mess. Where's the pastor's wife? I don't know. Where's your wife? Where are you? We perhaps have some baggage that we need to unpack with the pastor's wives. This is from the Aquila Report. This was written by Janie Ortland. The Ortlands, I think, are a big Presbyterian bunch. Going to be introducing you to a book written by one of them, and it's a beauty. But this is Janie, who is the wife of a pastor, has been for decades, talking about five myths about being a pastor's wife, starting with, my pastor's wife is biblically educated. Your assumption is she's a theologian. Some of them are. Not all of them are. And sometimes we expect them to be. When they're not, they're learning just like you and I. Her husband studied Greek and Hebrew, I hope. But she didn't. She probably didn't take systematic theology multiple semesters. He did. Do you expect her to be a theologian? Do you ever maybe have a conversation with her and you're shocked that she doesn't know everything that you do? Why? We wouldn't be with anybody else in the congregation, would we? Why the pastor's wife? Number two, my pastor's wife has spiritual gifts that she will use publicly in our church. This is a great quote from I believe it's pronounced Janie, Janie Ortland. It's J-A-N-I. Hope I've got that right. What spiritual gift? If you had your druthers, if you could assign a spiritual gift to your pastor's wife, what would it be? What would it be? All right, Jimmy, you are going to represent the tens and tens of people.
All right.
All right, your pastor's wife, you wish that, and just think in general terms, not your current path, but if a pastor's wife had any spiritual gift, it would be?
Discernment.
Discernment.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
I don't know.
All right. Maybe that she has the ability to teach the little kids.
Yeah. Oh, well, for sure.
Organize the women's ministries. That would be good.
Yeah.
Brace yourself for this from Janie Ortland. I believe the greatest spiritual gift she can give to her church is to love and care for her pastor husband. I love this because when you think about it for like more than a nanosecond, it's so true. Who's the shepherd of the church on earth? Well, of course, Jesus is the chief shepherd, but the under shepherd in your local manifestation of God's kingdom on earth is the pastor. How do you want him to be doing at home? You want him thriving, don't you? You want him doing great. You want him happy. You don't want him to be bogged down with burdens, do you? And if his wife is lifting that load from him, the entire church is blessed. Maybe your pastor's wife does nada around the church. But maybe she's working like crazy at home to keep things calm. I'm telling you, I know the value of a wife like that. I would not be able to do a fraction of the things that I do at this ministry if it were not for Mrs. Friel. I know it for a fact that the carking cares that can just be so distracting and weigh heavy on your heart, when those things are not existent inside of a home because of a godly, spirit-filled wife, oh, man. You know, happy wife, happy life. But when your wife is supporting the pastor, you'll be blessed by it. He'll be able to do more betterer. Would you have thought of that? I wouldn't. And clearly Jimmy didn't. I wouldn't have thought of that.
No, I wouldn't have either.
It wouldn't have thought of that, but it's true. If she is working hard at home so that he can be shepherding joyfully, oh, you're going to feel that every single Sunday. Consider the implication. Everybody in the church will be affected by that. And we want her to be running the nursery? Ain't nothing wrong with that, don't get me wrong. But running the nursery, it's going to affect a few people. A cheerful pastor who's rested? Woo! Myth number three. It's easy for my pastor's wife to build a family superior to mine. The expectation is, pastor's wives, it's all perfect. Again, from Janie Ortland. A surprising statement. It is perfect when your pastor's wife does not have the perfect family. What every congregation really needs to see is a family serving God with wholehearted devotion while dealing with the realities of sinful parents raising sinful children in this broken and sinful world. That authenticity and vulnerability will be a more convincing witness for Christ than building a perfect family, which is not doable. Myth number four. My pastor's wife doesn't care about me because she doesn't remember my name. That happens. People leave churches over that. She didn't. This is the third time I've had to tell her. I know it. I even sent her a card. And we leave over that. Okay. How might you help her? This is from a pastor's wife. Just smile at her as you look her straight in the eye and say, I can't imagine how many names you have to keep up with. I'm Jane Smith. Now, you should put your own name there. Don't say Jane Smith because that would be weird and not accurate. I'm Jane Smith, and I'm happy to tell you every time we meet, if that would just help you to lift a burden from your overloaded shoulders. Well then, wouldn't that be a blessing to her? And most likely, she's probably going to remember your name now. I don't know who the woman was. She was super crabby. Whatever her name is, she was mad because I didn't remember her name. You'd be nice to her? She's probably going to remember your name. Myth number five about your pastor's wife. She's so well connected to church, she doesn't need me. Just like the pastor needs pals, so does the pastor's wife. Too many wives of pastors live a solitary and somewhat lonely life. Her husband usually works on Saturdays, while other families, they're doing stuff on Saturday, Sunday mornings, holidays. Where's he? Church, maybe all day. Your pastor's wife, probably getting the kids ready. After getting everybody to church, most likely she'll sit alone. She doesn't get to sit with her pastor during the sermon and service, does she? It is not easy for her. So go ahead, initiate friendship toward her. Ask if you could take her out for coffee. Bring her some cookies. Get to know her better. And then, without prying or building up an arsenal of gossip, bring some cookies. Without prying, ask her about herself. How did she come to faith? Tell me your salvation story. What's your family like? What is she like? What do you do in your spare time? In other words, get to know her as a real person and as a friend, not as your pastor's wife. Tell her what you love about the church, if you can. Think of reasons why you are glad that God called her family to serve Christ at your church. And you will be blessing your pastor's wife. And guess what? There's kind of a bonus that just doesn't need to be there, but not the correct motivation. You bless your pastor's wife, she'll be a blessing to her husband, and that will be a blessing to you. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I'm Jimmy Hicks. ESPN commentator Jalen Rose apologized yesterday for claiming Kevin Love of the Cleveland Cavaliers only made Team USA's roster as a token white player. Rose apologized for his comments in a 42-minute Instagram video on Sunday, but he did not back off his contention that Love should not have made the roster. Rose also shifted blame back to his critics, claiming that many people are, quote, trying to assassinate my character, after he called Love's addition to the U.S. Olympic team tokenism. He said he was apologizing, though, so as not to disrespect the game, as well as other great NBA players and his late mother. So he's saying, I'm sorry. But really, I'm not sorry because the guy's white. He shouldn't be on the team. While I probably wouldn't disagree with the sentiment that Kevin Love is probably not as talented as some others to go on the team, the reason that he is or is not on the team should not have to do with the color of his skin. But yet, that's the world we live in today. Thanks, Jalen Rose, for reminding us of that. A U.S. senator sent a letter to the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom asking that it consider adding Canada to its watch list. Republican Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri wrote a letter on June 24th in response to Canada's crackdown on religious freedom. In his letter, he cited numerous instances of Canadian pastors being arrested and jailed for holding worship services that do not comply with COVID-19 restrictions. He said, quote, I'm troubled that our Canadian neighbors are effectively being forced to gather in secret, undisclosed locations to exercise their basic freedom of worship. Frankly, I would expect this sort of religious crackdown in communist China, not in a prominent Western nation like Canada. Of course, all of the Canadian COVID restrictions continue to take place against churches. All the while, sports teams are allowed to gather and play games in front of thousands of fans in Canada. Priorities, priorities, priorities. Recently, we told you about Disney Plus holding a Pride Celebration Spectacular, as they call it, where they had a drag queen and Kermit the Frog desecrating all your favorite Disney songs. In case you were wondering how that turned out, well, it was a little bit weirder than you maybe even imagined, as a ton of Disney songs were explicitly sung to affirm LGBT ideology. There were two men singing A Whole New World from Aladdin to each other as they gazed into each other's eyes. And of course, they had a, quote, non-binary actor, not even sure what that really means. This person made one of the best songs from Toy Story 2 all about how LGBT individuals feel discarded by those that don't affirm them. And for fun, Disney also had a lesbian star sing the Little Mermaid song, Kiss the Girl. Such a sad day when parents have to be on guard from the very people that came into existence to entertain our children. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Important dates in Christian history. 1054. Tensions between the East and the West had been brewing for centuries. But when negotiations between Rome and Constantinople went sour, both sides excommunicated each other, and the divide between Catholicism and Orthodoxy remains to this day. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Now I understand you, Jimmy. This is Wretched Radio. If and you recall, when asked, what spiritual gift would you like the pastor's wife to have? You said something surprising. You said
the gift of discernment.
All right. When you say the gift of discernment, You really mean being able to read somebody's mind.
Right, yeah, exactly. Fortune telling.
Not the gift of discernment biblically, but that's what you meant. Because, why?
Yeah, my wife, as a pastor's wife, experienced it quite a bit. In one particular situation where the lady in question expected my wife to know her issues without my wife having to ask her issues. She should just know what she's going through.
She's the pastor's wife.
Right, right.
So she should be clairvoyant.
Right.
Which, of course, we call the gift of discernment in evangelical Christianity.
That's right.
But nevertheless, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. You should just know how I'm feeling.
That's right.
You're the pastor. We do put expectations on those women, don't we?
We sure do.
We just expect them to be the ones that we called. I get it. They do need to be qualified to, but it's not about them being qualified, if you will. It's that they need to be of a certain character, or the pastor isn't qualified. So yeah, we should have expectations for a pastor's family. It's spelled out biblically. I think we go beyond that though, don't we? And we just tend to think that they need to be probably the best woman in the congregation, doing the most stuff with the bestest family. That ain't all that fair. Would like to give you a gift. Whether you're a pastor's wife or not, want to let you know that the nice folks at the Master's Academy International still have Declaring His Glory Among the Nations daily scripture meditations for pastors around the world. These are often anonymous pastors who are trained through the Master's Academy International who couldn't put their name because, well, they get killed. Nevertheless, their devotions are inside of this lovely book, and it is a beast of a book. It is pushing 400 pages. Well, that would make sense. Todd, there's 365 days in the year, so there's probably going to be at least 365 pages. Thanks for the math help. It's a gift to you. It costs you zippo. Simply visit wretched.org/pastor, wretched.org/pastor. In fact, I got to tell you, Jimmy, I was thinking about the Master's Academy International when we were talking about the pastor's wife exercising the gift of really just being a great support for the pastor and the implications of that.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think about that kind of thing because that's just smarter. It's like, oh, she's just a really wonderful, supportive wife helping him out, trying to organize a home so it's not chaotic. Then everybody in the congregation feels that. That's just thinking on a level that, well, I don't tend to stumble into all that often. And that's the Master's Academy International. It's equipping indigenous men to be pastors, preaching rightly in their own country, in their own language, because they have learned from a master's seminary graduate. It's brilliant. It is not one of those quick and tidy sort of things that we tend to like a lot. It's a big picture. It's a big idea. It's a big concept. Train men in their own nation. They dress correctly. Their wages are appropriate. It costs a lot to send somebody to Peru or to anywhere, frankly. Now, when they live there, it's cheaper is what I'm trying to say. And it's smarter. They know the customs. They know the zeitgeist. They know what is happening in society. They get references. They can minister to people if they are rightly trained. So if while you are at wretched.org/pastor, you can sign up for that book, learn more about the Master's Academy International. It happens to be, in my estimation, a really brilliant sort of ministry. And as long as we've talked about the pastor's wife, let's talk about your other favorite subject after church, the pastor himself. You do talk about him, don't you? Guess what? He hears some of it. Because when you're busy gossiping, you're probably gossiping to a gossip, and guess what they do? They gossip to other people. It's like Prel shampoo. No. What was the name of that conditioner? I always forget the name of the shampoo from the 70s. And so on, and so on, and so on. And then the shampoo split in two, and then in four, and then in eight, and then 16, 32. And then the other one, it was balsam. There was a conditioner. I can smell it right now. A hair conditioner called Selsun Blue.
Yeah, that's it.
No, that's a dandruff shampoo, right?
Oh, I don't know.
Selsun Blue. No, this is balsa salsan wood thing. It's when conditioner first came out. It was like a new thing. What? I've got to do more than just put shampoo on my head? Oh, the burden that we put upon ourselves. When you gossip to somebody, they gossip to somebody who gossips to somebody. And by the way, they'll gossip about you. So if you don't like being gossiped about, zip, zip, zip it. Discretion. Very important, especially about your pastor, David Murray. How to criticize a preacher. Have you understood him correctly? Are you sure you got it straight? We can goof up too, you know. Number two, have I given this enough time? Oh, how many texts I wish I would have held until the next day. How many times I wish that I had held fire until I actually learned a little bit more. Same thing is true with your pastor. Have you ever waited a day and wish you had fired it off earlier? Ever? I have not. Because every single time, it just seems that the next day it has a different light to it, doesn't it? It just feels the whole issue just seems to be different. Why didn't I wait? Now I look stupid. I look really angry because I was and is. How to criticize a preacher. Have you prayed about it before you talk to him? Please don't be the missile. You know, the missile. You've seen them if you're not it. If you haven't seen it, you're the missile. The pastor says, go in peace. Boom! And you are like a rocket right toward the guy. Hey, did you know what R.C. Sproul said about that verse? Okay. All righty. Not needed. Rocket. Pray about it. Four. Is this just a personal preference or a biblical principle? Is it really something theological or just a nit that you like to pick? Maybe your pastor wouldn't be so terrible in your mind if you were letting some of these things go. Number five, have I thought about the best way and time to communicate? Sunday probably isn't the best time. Neither is Monday. Tends to be pastor's day off. They're like restaurants. They close down on Mondays. That seems to be the trend. Have you noticed that? Is that just kind of a COVID thing, or has that been going on for a long time?
That or Fridays.
What?
Yeah, sometimes Fridays. But
no.
Mostly Mondays, because, you know,
what restaurant closes on Friday? Have you been doing the crack again? What are you talking about, Willis? Friday, that's fish. Sorry, that's if you're in Wisconsin. Sorry, lost my head for just a moment. By the way, is Friday night fish a big thing in Tennessee? I bet it's not.
No way. It is. It certainly is.
Catholics in Tennessee? Are you kidding me? There can't be fish night.
Yep, it sure is.
Okay. I stand corrected. Is it just a preference or a biblical principle? Have I thought about the best time and way to communicate? It is not Sunday. It's not Monday. And it's not on fish night. Don't do that. Am I doing this out of the right motive? Why do you need to correct your pastor? How often has it been, perhaps, because you just read something and learned something and you heard him say something that he probably didn't even have in mind anyway, but it didn't fully align with what you just learned and you have to tell him that he was wrong about it so that you can let him know how much you've been learning? Yeah. Number seven, am I focused on just spraying pellets? In other words, you say, oh, you know, and another thing. Oh, and as long as I've got you, you're a shotgun. Don't be doing that. Number eight, have I considered the possibility that I may be one of many others doing the same? Because you might just be the straw that breaks your pastor's back. Maybe somebody else has already talked to him about it. Find out. Like, the pastor is strong. He's not a sissy. If he is, he's probably in the wrong field. But you don't want to be piling on the guy. He does care for you. He really does. Seriously, unless you've got yourself a charlatan or a crook in your pulpit, the guy cares about you. And you say, well, but I don't feel it. Okay, is he there? Is he probably receiving a less than average wage? Did he transplant his family? Okay, he cares about you. Don't break his back by piling on. How to correct your pastor. Number nine, am I prepared to listen to his explanation or concede I was wrong? Could you be corrected? You might want to consider it. Of course, the guy can get defensive, but you've got to consider it, even if it's delivered poorly. Number 10, is it in the context of previously expressed appreciation? This is a good rule. If you have never encouraged your pastor, you don't get to correct him, not even once. In fact, I'll even go a step further. If you don't encourage your pastor somewhat regularly, you have really not purchased the right to make the correction. Sure, you could argue, but I'm supposed to be doing that. Okay? I'm just talking about wisdom here. Instead of piling on the critiques, let's pile on the praise and the encouragement. And then when needed, we lovingly and gently correct, being willing to admit that we too could be wrong. This is Wretched Radio. Don't tell me you couldn't use a little encouraging news. This is from Paul Marty. He is the executive director of the Tomorrow Club's Kids Clubs, meeting all throughout Eastern Europe to bring impoverished nations and families the gospel.
You know, most Tomorrow Clubs work in former communist communities where we find so many kids and families living hopeless lives. But with the help of the Wretched audience, we've been able to bring the gospel, hope, and long-term discipleship to thousands of kids in these forsaken communities.
Praise God for that. Would you please consider joining our effort to reach these kids and their families to strengthen local churches in Eastern Europe? $30 a month, 30 disciples. It is an outstandingly efficient gospel-centered ministries. Please prayerfully consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Hey, thanks for joining us on Wretched Radio today. Have you checked out Wretched TV yet? Yep, Wretched TV is a daily 30-minute program hosted by Todd with witnessing encounters, discussions on tough theological issues, and other topics the Christians are facing today. And it's simple to watch. Just check out your local listings for one of the 135 stations and networks that air Wretched TV, or if you'd like, you can log on to wretched.org/TV. And Wretched TV is also available on Roku, Amazon Prime, Truly, and Amazon Fire TV Stick. We've made it extremely simple for you to find Wretched TV, and we owe it all, of course, to our gospel partners. It's only because of their efforts that we're able to make Wretched TV available to everybody. If you're not already a gospel partner, we would love for you to prayerfully consider becoming one. You can help us to continue taking Wretched all over the world in our goal of preaching the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. And for that to continue, we need you. Just visit wretched.org/donate to join us as a gospel partner. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Surprise! I continue to be surprised by MediShare, even though I researched it like nobody's business before Mrs. Friel and I committed to affordable, biblical health sharing as opposed to our traditional insurance plan. I researched, but I did not know all of the things that I'm discovering about MediShare. For instance, people are way more satisfied after making the switch. The customer satisfaction rate is double that of typical health insurance plans. Double. Is MediShare right for everyone? No, nothing really is. But it might be right for your family, and you might be very, very happy with it, especially when you're saving on average $500 per month per family. Interested? Learn more at MediShare.com/wretched or receive a quote within 2 minutes by calling 844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE.
Know your church fathers. Athenagoras was a Christian philosopher in Athens who used his training to defend the Christian faith against Roman persecution. He wrote On the Resurrection of the Dead, arguing that the nature of God, the nature of humanity, and the concept of justice only make sense if there is a physical resurrection. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Lessons from the past. Carefully considered, this is Wretched Radio. How do we get our thinking totally biblical as we go about the business of living in a new zip code without having moved? That's the way it feels, doesn't it? You didn't get called to the mission field. The mission field was just slipped underneath your feet when you were perhaps going about your beeswax. Suddenly, everything seems different, and people are concerned about the future. Remember, it is okay to be aware of the future. You can even go, yikes, this doesn't look good, and be troubled. But if it is faithless worrying, oh no, all is undone. I'm going to get my stuff taken, and it's going to be terrible. There's no point. God can't help me. Why, oh, why is this happening to me? Then that's faithless worrying. That's the sinful kind. But don't think that you can't be aware, plan, and even be, yeah, I don't like what's coming down the pike. We see that exhibited by Jesus Christ, John 11, 12, 13, 14. Clearing up the distinction about how we should feel about what might be persecution of Christians. Right now, it certainly is in a milder form, isn't it? You might get your YouTube channel yanked, your Facebook page pulled. There could be more coming. How do we think it through? For your consideration, from some stories from the past. But please remember, as you read a story, chances are really good you don't have the context of everything that was going on, why this particular story was written. So even as we learn from stories in history, we still need to filter it through the Bible. A godly citizen, help from the past, from gentle reformation. That person, the godly citizen, was being described by Jean Calvin. I say that so that some people don't get upset. Remember, living in a city that really was way different than America. It was an attempt almost, I don't want to say theocratic, but it was far more of a mingling of church and state than what you and I could even imagine at this point in Switzerland a long time ago. Nevertheless, Calvin regarded our attitudes in the first place as obedience. That was preeminent. We must be obedient. Quote, the first duty of subjects toward their magistrates is to think most honorably of their office, which they recognize as jurisdiction bestowed by God, and on that account to esteem the reverence them as ministers and representatives of God. So as you filter through everything, the desire is, I want to be obedient. I don't want to find a loophole. I want to be obedient. Now, you can deal with loophole issues if you would like to try that. But first things first, said Calhoun, obedience. What about the unjust civil magistrate? He was certainly aware of that. First, he answers that we need to remember, you're not going to like this, a wicked ruler is God's judgment on a people. Now, does that mean you? Is God transitioning our nation politically because of you? In one sense, yes, because he's constantly mindful of you. He is always mindful of you. You're on the top of God's mind. Not that you're the priority in the universe, but he is as aware of you as anybody can be aware of anyone, more so. And so he doesn't do anything without your situation in view. But does that mean that we're moving, it seems, from one system that was better for human flourishing to one that has historically been proven not to be because he's judging you? No. No, he's not judging you. Your judgment was placed on Jesus. So anything that he is doing would be for your good. Nevertheless, we're looking at a statement that a bad ruler is a judgment on a people. And it's not hard to imagine that, is it? It's really not. Christmas alone, I would think, would be so infuriating to God. The birth of my son to save the world is turned into ho, 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 with a focus with kids longing. When's Santa going to get here? When's Santa get here? We got to get Santa. When's he? Let's put out cookies and milk. And they do nothing for God's son. That alone should bring judgment. Forget about the gender stuff, the sexuality business. Forget about abortion. Christmas alone. According to Calvin, a wicked ruler is God's judgment on a people. Quote, they who rule unjustly and incompetently have been raised up by him to punish the wickedness of the people. A wicked king is the Lord's wrath upon the earth. Now, please note, he takes Old Testament verses. Got away this. We're reading history, but not without our Bibles. These people wrote in a particular context. Second, even a tyrant possesses the lawful power of God that he gives to civil authorities, and we are to be subject to them. Quote, in a very wicked man, utterly unworthy of all honor, provided he has the public power in his hands. That noble and divine power resides, which the Lord has by his words given to the ministers of his justice and judgment. Accordingly, he should be held in the same reverence and esteem by his subjects insofar as public obedience is concerned, in which they would hold the best of kings if he were given to them. Whoa. Whoa. But we are, because we're not told to honor some good kings. Honor those good people in authority. No, honor all of them. Third, he answers that we need to be more concerned with our duty than the duty of civil authorities. Ooh, that stung a little bit. If you've been more consumed with how people are behaving in politics and less interested in how you're behaving, was reading a sermon this morning from 1860, and I can't remember the name of the guy who preached it. Doesn't matter. That was his message to his congregation. Let's be aware of the sins of other people, certainly, but more aware of our own sins. That's what God is interested in. Your sanctification, not the status of a nation. So that's the priority here. Quote, every man should keep in mind that one duty which is his own. This ought to particularly apply to those who have been put under the power of others. Therefore, if we are cruelly tormented by a savage prince, if we are greedily despoiled by one who is avaricious or wanton, if we are neglected by a slothful ruler, if finally we are vexed for piety's sake by one who is impious and sacrilegious, let us first be mindful of our own misdeeds, which without doubt are chastised by such whips of the Lord. By this, humility will restrain our patience. Gotta tell you, that's tough stuff. But I would also suggest to you, that's not like Christian graduation level stuff. This is what we signed up for. If you didn't know that, when you repented and put your trust in Jesus Christ, I'm sorry, but you should have been expressly told, this is about death to self. This is about living for another. This is about dying for another. This is about surrendering all, not some, not a little, not when it's convenient. We surrender all. If you're not ready, then you can't put your hand to the plow. You're not fit for service. You got to go bury your own dead. Just go deal with it. Go deal with your property issues. You're not ready. Jesus made it clear. This is not like superstar Christian maturity. This is how we enter into the kingdom. I'm done with me. My life means nothing. Nothing. This is a challenge for all of us. Please, I haven't graduated. This thinking is hard. And that's why so much of it is expressed for us by others. Fourth, we should commit ourselves to prayer. Finally, we must obey God rather than men. When they tell us to sin, we don't. Can't do it. God's the supreme authority. We know that. And so if the wicked rulers tell us to do something that is a sin, we obey God first. Short of that, we obey the authority that God has put in place, knowing that they are a judgment upon a nation, knowing that they are actually for our good, knowing that we are to be a bright light because of it. That is what 1 Peter is all about. That you will shine brighter as a child of God, a child of the light, when you are squeezed and what comes out of you is joy and love and forgiveness. That staggers the world, and God uses it to save people. Do we digest every single word that Jean Calvin wrote? Perhaps, perhaps not. Filter it through the Bible, but make sure that your Bible goes before the context of our culture. Get it straight in your noggin. Then take a look at your culture and ask yourself the question, how am I to live as a citizen of this earthly realm while I am a child of God's kingdom? That is our challenge, and it is going to be ongoing. And it is going to require gentleness from all of us as we talk to one another and lovingly work through a brave new world. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.